My name is Richard Ramposky, and I'm sitting in the studio this morning with a lady by the name of Margaret Hamilton. We were talking about names and people who are recognized and people who aren't. I thought this morning, Ms. Hamilton, before you came to the studio, was your name ever a drawback, you think, as an actress? Because it's such a usual name. I've known two Margaret Hamiltons in my life.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that a name... I know people change their name sometimes for numerical reasons, you know. The numbers don't add up right. Or perhaps it's a very difficult name to pronounce, something like that. But in general, I don't think it really makes a great deal of difference. I always feel it's like the mousetrap business, you know. If you do good work and people like you, then it really doesn't matter what you're called. They can manage it somehow.
do tell them with whom they confuse you, because I haven't thought of it.
Oh, well, I have often been given credit for Dora Morandi's work. And Dora and I look, when we get dressed up as characters, I don't think that we look a great deal alike. There's a similarity in the shape of our faces. We have both have long faces and we both have big noses. But we don't, otherwise I don't think we really look alike at all. But when we get our hair back, you know, and the knot and the little hat on the head and all, we do resemble each other very much. And I have played sisters a number of times. And I'm always, every once in a while, getting credit for Dora's work, as I was saying, in the movie The Man with the Golden Arm. I was working at NBC every day at the time in a radio serial called Doctor's Wife. And I would go up and down in the elevator, and people would say, oh, just loved your work in Golden Arm. And I'd say, oh, thank you. And if I told you, if they don't press the thing and say, when did you make it, and how did you like it, and what was it like to work with so-and-so? I don't say anything about it because it is often embarrassing to them. But if we get in any kind of a conversation about it, I then eventually say, well, I'll tell you something. I think you're talking about Dora Morandi, and thank you for the compliment. But I don't like to, if I can avoid it, because I think it's a little embarrassing to them. They feel that then I'm going to be, you know, put out a little bit because they didn't recognize me. I have no feeling like that at all. I think Dora Morandi's a superb artist, and I would always be very flattered to be given credit for her work. But
you must be recognized a lot, though, living in New York City. Oh,
I am. I'll tell you, it's mainly, though, for The Witch, which just annoys me so. Of course, I really should get used to it now, and I should be grateful, I guess, being a character actress, that they remember me for anything. But that was not my very favorite piece of work, but the impact is still absolutely startling to me. And of course, it's only because of television. It would never have had this impact if it hadn't been for that. It's the thousands of people that see it. And then, you know, in addition to that, one of the funniest things that happens to me inside is that I will think I look very nice, you know, and I'm waltzing down the street. You know how you look at glance at these. You may not, but most ladies glance in the store windows you go by and think, yeah, that looks pretty good. And then somebody comes up and says, oh, I know you anywhere. I just loved you as the Wizard of Oz and the Witch. And I think, well, you know, what's the use of getting all fixed up and fussed up?
You live in that charming section of Gramercy Park with the lovely playground right in the middle. Now, do children recognize you? They see this film on television now.
No, they really don't. I don't think the little ones do. Their mothers do, you know. And some of the younger, I would say perhaps 6, 7, 8, sometimes do. But they're not expecting you, and they really don't. They don't suddenly, don't see a look come over somebody's face. And you know how in sitting across the subway, people look up at the ceiling, and then they look at me, and then they look down the car, and then they look at me again, and then they look the other way. And then finally, then suddenly I can just see it, you know, the light dawns. And they either smile at you or not, or come over. But look, children, I don't think, do many. They don't, you know, expect it, and they're not. Once in a rare while, they will. But that's mostly because someone has said, you know, who's sitting over there, you know.
Wicked Witch of the West.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Did you happen to see the Jack Parr spectacular of last spring, I think it was, and he had Judy Garland on?
No, I
wasn't.
Well,
he was
here
interviewing her, and he asked, that's right, you were on a tour around the world. He kept trying to get you. And he asked her about Wizard of Oz, of course, and about the Munchkins. And she said, well, the Munchkins mostly were drunk. Does she remember? Is that what you recall?
I think she's kidding, because she was such a little girl and such a darling. And I think, well, she was 16, I believe, when we started it. And I don't know, I'm probably very naive, because today, heaven knows, I'm sure 16-year-olds know a lot more than I ever will, or I've forgotten, or I'll ever know. But at that time, I don't know. Perhaps there were. I don't remember that at all. I think she was probably teasing.
She wanted to ask her for a date.
Well,
that's probably trying to get a date.
Well, that may be very possible because that, you know, I don't. Being here at the woman, I don't have very much. Or a woman, I don't have much trouble with that sort of thing. Not at that age, anyway.
But, Someone told me that you had taught school.
Yes, I taught kindergarten, nursery school for 6 years before I went into the theater.
Well, what I was going to ask you is, now you probably knew Judy Garland, you know, when making the picture, and I know you have a boy. Was Miss Judy Garland very pressured at that time? Now, would you have allowed your child to go through that?
Well, I wouldn't, if I could help it. I would not allow my child to go into the theater at all until, you know, after college. That's my idea. Or at least if they were terribly burned up with it, not until. And then I would feel that they must go through college and study specialize in theater or have it their major effort in college, which you can do now a great many times. But I think the degree is almost adamant these days. I think it's very hard to get any kind of a job without one. And I'm a firm believer in no children, I guess, in the theater, which would be very difficult for all of us, I'm sure, in many ways. But I just think it takes away so much of the childhood. I don't know. I didn't really know. Judy was the one I was with most of the time in the picture. And she was, I don't think she really was a star at that time, as she is, heaven knows now. But she certainly was on her way. And she was a very busy little girl when she wasn't on the picture. And most of my scenes and all were with Judy. I had very little, actually, to do with the others. And we knew each other in, I'm years older. And it wasn't exactly what you'd call a close relationship. But I was with her, you know. We talked every once in a while, as one does on the set. And she, all I know is that she was absolutely darling person and completely amenable and cooperative and everything else. I mean, I think that the any difficulty that people may have felt about her a little later on in her perhaps behavior on set or her own difficulties were basically, I would think, health problem. You know, she was then, I think, pressured terribly. As I remember, she was in one picture after another and she was having, you know, her own personal problems. I think she married pretty young, and I would gather a much older man, and then I think that went on the rocks. And all the time she was working quite steadily. And there certainly was. I didn't know if there was pressure when she was in Wisterbos. I certainly didn't know that she seemed completely happy and like a normal, carefree, happy 16-year-old who was doing what she loved to do.
That was The Wizard of Oz, I think, one of the few what I would call perfect pictures. It just, you know, it's a beautiful film to see after all these years.
I think it is, too.
Did it gel right from the beginning when you were making it? Did you have the sense?
Well, you know, you don't know because you don't see the rushes. And I really wouldn't be able to tell you. Just do your work and you know in each scene whether it was satisfactory to you or you wish you'd done it differently or something. But everybody said it must have been fun. Well, it was fun, but it was very hard work. You were in the chair at 7 o'clock in the morning and didn't get out until 9 in the makeup, all of us were, and then you went on the set, and it was always fun, I think, doing what you love to do no matter what it is. But it isn't the sort of thing I would just say, well, it was a perfect circus to make, you know, anything like that. It was hard work and interesting, and I don't think we knew. I didn't know really what it was going to be. I had no idea it was going to be anything like this, and I don't think most of us thought so. I think the studio, as I remember, thought it would probably last 10 years because they took out a scene, the jitterbug, you know. They had a whole sequence of my sending the jitterbugs to the forest to bite them, you see, and make them dance until they dropped dead. And that was to sort of soften the others so the monkeys could get in there and get dirty, I guess. And they took it out, and because it was an exciting and a wonderful. I suppose I did now and then see snatches of parts of it. But anyway, either I saw that or the filming itself. I don't remember ever going really to rushes. But they did take this out because they wanted not to have it dated in any way. And they thought the jitterbug would date it, you know. That was definitely a jitterbug dance that would go out.
How did you get from teaching school in Cleveland, Ohio, to Broadway? And
well, I don't really know. I know how. I always wanted to teach kindergarten as long as I could remember. And then I was in the senior play. I went to a girls' school in Cleveland called Halfway Brown School. And at the senior, you know, play, we took the men's parts because there weren't any boys around. And I played an older man, much than my father, and I just loved it. And that's really when I got really badly bitten to the stage, and I was sat on promptly with the family. And so, in those days you didn't say, I am going to do it, and you can, you know, do what you please. You did as you were told. That's the way we were brought up. And so I sort of bided my time, and I didn't, I really dismissed it. Then the family said, no, you know. I said, if you want to fool around after a while, but you must first, you know, do this other, and then proceed as you always have wanted to do, which was probably a very sensible, you know, answer. So I did, as I was told, and I was never regretted it. I just adored teaching kindergarten. But then I sort of must have kept it in my mind a good deal, because when I went back, I went to Wheelock Kindergarten Training School in Boston, which is now a college, but it was just a kindergarten training school then, just 2 years, and I went back to teach in the public schools in Cleveland. And the first thing I did when I got home, without my realizing it, I tried out for a play at the Playhouse, which was a small, very small little theater, and I'm up on Cedar Avenue in those days in Cleveland. And I was accepted for Heaven Help Us, a part of an English woman who smoked cigars and pipes and joined the gentlemen after dinner instead of going for coffee and port with the ladies or whatever they had in the drawing room. And it was a rather bizarre type, and I'm sure my English was absolutely unbelievable. It was pure Ohio, you know. But anyway, I just loved it, and I did it. And then, of course, I was teaching morning and afternoon in public schools, and I really couldn't rehearse the proper hours, and it was too difficult for them to work around me. This didn't matter, because it was a very small part anyway. So then I didn't do anything more about it. And after a year or so, I had a private preschool, nursery school of my own in Cleveland. And then I thought I was going to be married, and then I changed my mind, and I went to Rye Country Day School to teach. This is outside of New York, of course, and I began going to the theater a great deal and got again badly bitten. And then when I went the next year, my mother had died, and I went home to be with Dad for a while. So that year, I had a nursery school again on the lakeshore in Cleveland for little children who it was difficult for them to get in, mostly friends, you know, children, my sister's friends and so forth. And then I started working at the Playhouse in the afternoons, because it was this morning, and I just loved it so. And then they invited me to come in the full time. It was not a question of full time or otherwise. It was just sort of what you call active member. They wouldn't take any more students, I think, than they had four. And nowadays they have something like, used to have about, you know, 50 or something, but now they have many more. But I guess it was probably also a matter of scholarship type of thing. Well, I didn't need that because I was being home anyway, living at home. And so I started working there, and then the next year I just gave up the kindergarten business entirely and concentrated on the stage.
You know, you said that people, when they hear your name or see you, they immediately think of the Wicked Witch of the West. I have a friend who's in the hospital right now, as a matter of fact, but well, I called him last night. I said, I'm going to tape Margaret Hamilton tomorrow morning. And he said, Margaret Hamilton, do you know what she was marvelous in? Another Language.
Oh, well, that's how
nice. Many people don't
remember
that.
That's a lovely, lovely compliment, because that was 1932, I think, Another Language.
Fine play.
Well, it was the first play I was in New York.
And, was
you know,
it?
Yes. You know, I'm sure there are always these moments for all of us, and I always feel, but for the grace of that, I might still be, you know, tapping around. I still am tapping around, but I might be have not opened any doors, because it was that, you see, that was the first picture I made, too. And it was Helen Hayes and Robert Montgomery played the leads in the picture, and Dorothy Stickney and Glenn Andrews on the stage. But it was a part, I've never had a part like it since, and I expect I probably never will. I would rather be remembered for that than anything I know of, because it had at least I tried to give it a restraint and subtlety and lots of things that one likes to think could be connected with one's work.
Well, he'd seen all of your pictures, you know, but that's the first thing he thought of.
Well, that was a wonderful part, just wonderful. And it was a wonderful play. I often wonder why it hasn't been revived more, except I'm sure that the climate, you know, nowadays of the theater would tab that as extremely old-fashioned and out of... But it is,
yeah,
you know,
I think
it's
led the way for a number of... a number of other plays.
Yes, I know. It was really, really
Rose Franklin.
Wonderful.
Now,
yes,
why doesn't she write more?
Well, you know, she did quite a little bit afterwards, though, quite a lot of writing, and I think she's written a couple of books in the last, I guess, 5 years. But she also, I don't keep closely in touch with Rose. I talk to her once in a while and see her in a rare time. I always think we'll see each other more, but New York being what it is, one does not. And I think that she had not been awfully well in the last, now I guess, 5 years off and on. She's been in and out of the hospital. She wrote, apparently, a very terribly funny book about her experience in the hospital. Now, I'm ashamed to say I can't remember the name, but it was a delightful name and a very funny book. And then she wrote about her own experiences as a playwright and the people she worked with in Austin.
I like to work with
her. But she did, you know, turn out a lot of the Claudia things for a long time. But I always feel with Rose that she's, you know, not heaven knows a one-time writer, but she's not somebody that just, you know, tosses it off and then goes on to the next sheet. Her plays always, to me, have been a great deal of insight and depth to them, more perhaps than some others.
Mm.
Perhaps that's why she doesn't. I wish she would, but I think there comes a time when you feel, perhaps as a writer, I don't know, but that you have said what you wanted to say. Perhaps I don't really know.
You're in front of you is a picture from the scene from the My Little Chickadee.
Adored that man.
One of my favorite pictures.
He was
how was that
wonderful
fun to
person.
Make?
Oh, that was really the most fun. I think I laughed more in that picture than I ever laughed in my life before or since, just all the time. Mr. Fields was the dearest person. I just adored him. I always expected he'd be a sort of a diamond in the rough, you know. And he was just a diamond.
I thought a little cross myself, really.
He was.
I thought he might be a little, you know, grumpy.
No, he was just wonderful. And you know, I often think of him, and I never get over the surprise of it, because to me he was one of the finest gentlemen, and I say that in every meaning of the word, that I ever worked with. He never, on the set, within the hearing of ladies, not that this is so violently important at all, but he never said anything that one, you know, shouldn't hear. He never used obscene language, which a lot of times people do, you know, they get carried away with something. And he was always such a gentleman, and at least when I was, I just loved him, and fun. And of course, you know, everybody knew he, as he used to say, drank his lunch. And he would around later on in the afternoon, not, you know, it would not always be something that they could keep, develop. But he was terribly funny. He was never, you know, I never knew anything about him that was not very much of a gentleman. And even when he would go off on these sort of arms of conversation, let's say he'd start something, you see, and then he'd go off, or he'd finish the scene, and then he'd go on with it. And he was always hilariously funny. And I had a perfectly, my very first experience with him in the train was terribly funny, because we had finished the scene and you know, I expected them to say cut, and they didn't, and it went on and on. All of a sudden, I felt his arm around me and sort of hugging me up, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And he said, "You live around here, little girl?" And I looked out the window, and I thought, no, they didn't give me these lines at all. And I, you know, didn't want to look at the camera, of course, or anybody else, and I sort of glanced at him, and then I glanced out the window, and I thought, well, what am I going to say? And I thought, this is the limit. They didn't give me these lines. And I said, no. And he said, you live with your mother and father? And I said, no. And he said, well. And, of course, I didn't know what was going on, you see, all this time. This was all ad lib on his part. And this went on and on and on, and it biting my lip. And I, of course, went to see it the next day. He wanted me to see it, and it was just terribly funny, because I was, you know, when I finished the scene, cut was written all over my face. I was finished, and I was looking out at the cowboys and the Indians outside, and all of a sudden, you know, and then he's doing all kinds of little faces and winkings at the camera, you know, and sizing me up and everything. And then around me goes the arm, and then this complete amazement on my face as I feel this hug up, you know, and I think, and then saying, "You live around here, little girl," and I thought, why? You know, I was so mad, because I thought, now this is awful. They didn't give me these lines at all. I don't know the answer. I don't know what to say. You see? It was very funny.
It's funny, you know, the first person I ever interviewed in my life, which was about 12 years ago, I guess, in California, was Richard Cromwell.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the first questions I asked him was, what was W.C. Fields like? Because he was in Poppy with him. And he said, I have never met Mr. Fields. And I said, well, you were in Poppy with him. And he said, yes, it's true. He said, we were. But he was ill, and everybody was told not to bother him at any time on the set because it was very difficult for him to finish the film. He said, I was never even introduced to him. So I rather questioned that. Just 2 days ago, I went to the New Yorker Theater to see Poppy, which I'd never seen, just to see, and they did not have a scene together.
For goodness sakes, that can happen.
Yeah.
It's one of the funniest things about pictures, you know, because you can be in a picture and your best friend can be in it. And I remember Sarah Hayden was in it. We were in a picture called Way Down East together. No, it wasn't Way Down East. It was another one. I didn't know she was in it. She didn't know I was in it. And she called. We were, you know, we never met. Never the twain shall meet. So I can't remember now the name of the picture. So she called me one day and said, do you want to go and see a picture that I'm in? And I said, yes, I'd love to. And we were going in the afternoon. And she said, what is it? And she said, and I thought, oh, I'm in that too. And so I thought, well, I won't tell her anything about it. And so we went, you see, and before Sarah came on, I came on. And she said, well, for heaven's sake, she didn't tell me you were in this. And I said, yes, I know. But here we were going, you know, it was such fun because she had no idea that I was in it. And I had not known that she was in it. That's what she told me.
Yeah, delightful.
It was great fun. But that happens, you know. You can be in a picture and you don't. And often, I was in, for instance, a picture with Gene Harlow's last picture and that wonderful Clark Gable. And I had a little tiny scene with Mr. Gable and Saratoga. And I never saw him. So I saw Miss Harlow on the set and met her to say, how do you do to? But that was the sum and substance of that. You know, people say, what was she like? Yeah. You know, well, you don't know what she's like at all.
Back again to my little chick D. Now, you loved him. What about her?
Oh, I loved her, too. She was just great. She had, as I remember, pretty much the say of the casting, and I was so flattered and pleased that she wanted me. Because that was given, everybody, I guess, was given to understand that she pretty much decided whom she wanted to have in the picture. I don't think, you know, he probably didn't care. But you just try and get anything away from him anyway. So I'm sure it didn't make any difference to him who was in it. But she's, you know, she's about up to my shoulder. And she was also a complete lady. She did not smoke, chew, drink, or anything else on the set. And I just loved her. She was all business and fun, you know, and lovely, twinkle, sort of sense of humor. And he would, as I think all great comedians do, if it's funny once, it's funny six times, you see, and they enjoy doing these things. And so there's a time, and you have to have a director or someone that knows, now this is, you know, this is enough of this, or decide, you see, to cut it out. But he would be enjoying something. He'd go on and on with it, you know, and she'd say, no, that's enough. And he'd say, well, just try once more. No, that's enough. I don't want any more. And there'd be these little, you know, sort of controversies. And one day, Eddie Klein, who directed, who was such a wonderful person and was a, I guess, old vaudevillian from way back and the most fun. And he had a habit of taking off his hat and doing one of those off to Buffalo steps after every completed, you know, shot. And he said to me one day, you know, he said, I'm not directing this picture. I'm refereeing it. But there was really no, I mean, there may have been between them. Nobody knew. No one knew there was any real dissension between the two. But there were these little moments. And Mr. Fields was apt to sort of go on and on and just enjoy everything thoroughly. And she enjoyed it, too. But she had a very definite and, I think, correct sense of this is, you know, when to stop and when not to stop. And I think so often I found with a few really great comedians I've had the privilege of working with, they don't know when to stop. You know, they just enjoy it so much. And everybody else is enjoying it, so they go on.
Mr. Field's son was at the Gallery of Modern Art about a year ago.
Oh, really?
And he brought with him his grandson.
Oh.
Amazing enough, they look very much like
his
senior. And someone asked him, of course, about My Little Chickadee, because it's just a classic film.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Still so funny. And he said, well, oddly enough, if you watch that film, there are very few scenes in it where they're together.
Yeah.
And it's for this reason. They didn't gel that well as personalities.
Well, you see, I think, as I understood it, I may be wrong, but I thought they wrote it together. And it turned out, as someone explained to me at the studio later on, that it was a sort of a series of very funny incidents that they both sort of thought up. But it was as I understand, the thing that connected was to be my character. Well, my character wasn't strong enough, and it wasn't, you know, it was sort of in and out, and she was just crazy about him. I think she sort of was looking around for a man anyways, I remember.
One of the decent women of the town,
as I thought he was absolutely charming person, because I must say that was not exactly what I call restrained or subtle. He's a work of mine. But that, I think that the storyline perhaps wasn't, as they say, wasn't strong. Because I think that I thought the storyline didn't matter with those two people in it. Because I think that scene with Ned Weston, I'll never forget, in that schoolroom. I think it's absolutely divine. And of course, and his one, you know, is that where he works up with the goat in Bedlam?
Yes.
Yeah. Was there a manhole cover in that? I can't remember. Either he told this or
no, that'd
it was
be
in
the wrong
some
period
other,
for a manhole
well,
cover.
Well, it was in some other either picture. I can't remember. But I think seemed to me I mean probably told it to us because the story wasn't he said he woke up in the morning and he felt he had a manhole cover on his head, and imagine my surprise when I reached up and there was a manhole cover on my head. He probably was something he told us, but
he's so remarkable because I see many of his old films. I see all of them when they're shown again, usually at the New Yorker, and very often if you go on a matinee, it's full of children.
Mm. Oh, really?
Mostly people about
I'm
my age who have children, and they brought them. But the children laugh.
Oh, I know. I think, again, with the really great, there are some that probably, I don't know how many, I would say perhaps 10, maybe not that many, really great, great comedians. And, of course, their timing and their subtlety and to me, it's the most absolute beautiful piece of artistic work, you know. It's just like a jewel to me to see people like that work, and the little nuances, his timing and his subtleties and his looks and everything was just so superb.
Those asides he does, and you have to listen very
carefully.
Panorama
is so
many
wonderful.
Many films I want to see over and over again,
these
you miss.
Know it.
And then
but
the laughter is so loud,
you'll
miss it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There'll just be one and two word lines. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you audience, because you look at people, and everybody, Chris, was always watching him when he was on, and then it was a great place to bring visitors. Apparently, I don't think he seemed to care very much, and I don't know if Miss West did or not, but, you know, there would always be all the top people in the studio would bring people in, you know, and they'd stand on the sidelines. And you looked around, you looked at the electricians and everybody, the various people that really the only audience you had usually in a picture, and all the other actors, and everybody standing around there with this big grin on their faces, just waiting for something, you know. And then, of course, there'd be these doublings up, no sound, of course, because you... Naturally, he didn't laugh out loud, but people would just really double up, you know, with laughter over something he'd done, you know. Oh, to me, he's just tops. I adored the person, and he was so kind and so really did so many lovely little thoughtful things for me and for all of us. I just loved him. I always resent any. Not much when I read an article about, Mr. Fields was this or so and so and so and so, but to me, he was a real gentleman, a really, really gentleman, and an absolute darling. I just loved him.
Well, you couldn't say about anyone I admire more. So.
Oh, it's nice.
That's very good.
Glad to hear you.
Very
do.
Good to hear. Are we going to see you again soon?
I don't know. I hope so. I just got a little notice from Jack Mapes, the producer of Rosie, which I have a very small part with, and Rosalind Russell's new picture. And they're going to preview it, I think, in California. He's been inviting everybody, and I'd like to be able to fly out and see it and fly back. But I really don't know why I would, because I don't have that big a part at all, but it was fun to do. And then apparently something I was in, I did 2 years ago, I think it was. About a year and a half ago, was Who's Afraid of Mother Goose? And that's apparently coming out. But that was a television special. It was supposed to go promptly on at Easter, and is now, you know, about to be shown, I guess. But I don't know of anything that's coming up. That's the damnable part of this business and the exciting part of it. You never know when the telephone is going to ring. It may not ring for months, but on the other hand, it may ring tomorrow.
Maybe ringing right now.
Very exciting.
I brought
job.
You out on such a nice day. I should say double thanks to
no.
to Margaret Hamilton.
He'll always come again, you know.
Because I went to see her the other day and took a tape recorder to a beautiful apartment she has in Gramercy Place, and the tape recorder didn't work, and she was nice enough to come back.
A nice dividend.
Thank you. Yes, it was. On a very busy day. So we've been talking today with Margaret Hamilton, the Wicked Witch of the West, and you see, she's really very nice. Thank you very much. And this is Richard Lamposky. Next week at the same time. Thanks for listening. Good night.